Hello, Delphina here to talk to you about our official Screen Tones Patreon launch. Woo! If you like our webcomic resources and want to support the work we do, head on over to patreon.com/screentonescast and become a patron today. All support helps us cover the cost of the resources needed for the projects we create and gets more webcomics help out there to the masses. That's patreon.com/screentonescast. Thanks for your support.
Hello, and welcome to Screen Tones, where we talk anything and everything webcomics. Today, we're going to be chatting about drawing from photography using the incredible resources that is Adorka Stock, featuring our nice guest, Sarah. My name's Crispy. I use she, they pronouns, and I make the comics Ghost Junk Sickness and Lunar Blight. Sarah, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, friends. My name is Sarah. I use she, her pronouns. A lot of people know me as Adorka Stock. I've been providing pose references for artists for going on 18 years, which is a really long time to be doing a thing. And I'm here today to talk about that.
I'm Miranda. I use she, her pronouns, and I make the webcomic Into the Swell.
And I'm Verithane. I use she, they pronouns, and I make the webcomics Chiralt and Witchwood.
Okie dokie smoky. So, drawing anatomy and poses can be absolutely tricky, but there's some excellent tools out there for referencing poses and whatnot. And we're going to be talking, we have absolutely the honor of talking to Sarah, who is Adorka Stock and has made that, like she said, for 18 years, amazing resource for folks. But how do we use it in an effective way? How do we actually, you know, really learn from this and grow from using references like Adorka Stock? So we're going to chat about that. And so the first question I kind of have is, what is stock imagery? How is it intended to be used? How do we figure out poses? Sarah, take it away. I'd love to know kind of the meat and potatoes of Adorka Stock.
Yeah, so one thing that's kind of interesting is how I ended up here, which will kind of answer this question in the long way around. When I was drawing after college, during college, I had access to life drawing classes, which is how I did most of my figure studies. And after college, I was want for that experience. And I realized pretty quickly that I sort of needed that to keep my drawing chops up, so to speak. So originally, I went to DeviantArt, which is where I could find what was considered stock photos at the time, but most of what people were doing at that time was for photo manipulation. So they were taking pictures in costumes, they were done up as characters, and people were using those to make like book covers and posters and things like that, which was very cool, but it wasn't kind of what I needed. I mean, there was nude photography available, but I didn't want like classic poses. I wanted like dynamic action poses. So I was sort of reduced to people dressed as fairies or people dressed in bathing suit character. Kind of had to look for that type of photography, which I kind of used up pretty quickly because it wasn't commonly used theme in this space. So eventually what happened was I just said, okay, I think I just have to start taking my own photos for myself. And that's how I started, is I was illustrating and I needed my own references. So I started doing that and people loved it. And I was like, this is great, you know? And, but it was great for me too, because as an artist, I don't know how much you all know about aphantasia, which is the inability to have pictures in your head. So that's me. I don't have head pictures. And even though I had this history of life drawing and I had done all this study, if I don't keep up feeding the beast, I lose the information. So I had to continuously feed myself these new references in order to keep up the skill set. So that's how I ended up doing this. And I've already forgotten the question.
So we're talking about your origin stories, which is absolutely incredible that it started from DeviantArt. Absolutely have been there for getting poses. And it was definitely where, you know, that's where I started with Adorka Stock all those years ago.
Same, yeah. Too. When people were passing it around on DeviantArt way back in the day, back when it was under a different name. But fond memories of the DeviantArt days.
Oh my God, yeah, you're right. It wasn't a different name. What was the other name?
Senshi Stock.
Yeah. That was the original, because originally I was illustrating Sailor Moon characters. Like that was my primary fandom, and I was drawing people's OCs and stuff. So I was taking photos for that specific purpose, like magical girl themed things. And of course the name was just everybody on DeviantArt that was doing stock photos had like something stock, you know, like there was Faye stock, yeah, and Pirate Lotus stock, and all these people that had this obvious naming convention. I was like, I want to fit in.
Yeah. As a young, like nerdy artist in that time period, like Senshi stock was legendary among my friends. So
yeah. And it started off really, I mean, I love to tell this story because I just think it's funny in retrospect, but when I first started posting my really terrible low res digital, like I had a Panasonic point and shoot. It had like a 3 second timer. It was like a really old, I think it was like a early to mid 2000 point and shoot camera. So this thing was like, you know, it had seen its day long past. And I would post these images that were, like 600 by 900 pixels. They were small. And my entire gallery got scrapped. So DeviantArt moderators looked at what I was making and said, this is literally trash, and just kind of threw it in the bin. And I was really, really upset. I was like, these are fine for drawing references, which is what I'm making, but they weren't good enough or high quality enough for photo manipulations because they were not professional photography. Mm-hmm. So they said, nope, you can't put these in our gallery. Like DeviantArt used to actually be moderated, which it's hilarious now. But they used to be gallery moderators who kept a certain standard of quality for their perspective areas. And it was, you know, community run and everything. And so they said, no, you know, you can't post these. These aren't good enough. And I had a real fit about it because I was, you know, 27 or whatever. And I was really upset. And I did what I could to try to make them better. So I got a better light and I tried to do some stuff to make them better. And I didn't crop them as tight. This is the dumbest part, is that it had to be a minimum of, you know, let's say what it was, 1200 pixels or whatever. So I just wouldn't crop it as small to the figure. I would leave all the blank space.
Oh my gosh.
Around the figure to make it big enough to hit their like required minimum size. So I was like a real thorn in their side when I first started posting because they were like, oh my God, this girl doesn't get it. She's like, she's making trash and we hate it and she's in our space. Why are you here? But the people who were finding it were like, God, this is great. This is exactly what I needed. It's so easy to see your shape. And thank you for not wearing a big dress. And I can see your knees. And I love this. And so I knew what I was doing was helpful in helping people. And it was helping me. And I felt very like, my ego is very bruised by them being like, well, it's not good enough. And I was like, listen, I just got out of college. I have no money. I can't go buy a fancy camera. I can't take professional photographs. This is what I can do. Please let me do it.
You know, and it's interesting. We had an episode earlier about 3D models in art and using that. And I think it's a great resource. Any resource for learning art and getting better and, you know, making the process easier for you is A++++. But you mentioning like, you know, I can see your knees and stuff like that. It's just, we're going to get into that in this episode about why it's so important to use like these sorts of references, especially like photography and like life drawing and whatnot. There's just that certain way that, you know, 3D cannot like replicate with how the body moves and how diverse and whatnot it is. So this is going to be how and why it's so integral to that. And I did want to ask both Miranda and Thane just kind of general questions before we jump into that, you know, because we were talking about our original question about, you know, how it's intended to be used and whatnot. You know, do you too, and I know Thane did, but, you know, Miranda, what's your experience in using, you know, photo shoots and references like this?
So as someone who never went to art school, so I never had like real life drawing classes to reference, and I started my art journey late in life when Adorka stock was already a thing. Like I might have come like right before the name change, because I remember Senshi stock and I remember the name change announcement, but like I never had the life drawing experience. So learning to do anatomy, I like essentially it all came from online learning because I didn't go to school. I was self-taught. Mm-hmm. And so my life drawing, quote, air quotes, is using things like Adorka stock because that's the closest I've gotten. And it's amazing how much it helps to just like I can visualize an image or like a pose that I want, like, okay, this is the pose I want, but it doesn't get to the paper. And I need that reference of the pose I want to kind of connect those dots and just like see how the muscles actually move, see where the knees are going. And it's like it invaluable as a resource. And I think especially these days when so much is on the internet, and yet it's still so hard to find good reference photos. So there's an obvious need for it. And AdorkaStock is doing amazing at filling that need. But yeah, it's like, so again, my primary life drawing experience has been with online resources like this. And I would probably not be where I'm at without that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. How do you feel about that thing too? Talk to me about your journey.
Yeah, so it is funny that you mentioned the whole like life drawing thing, because one of my favorite features on the AdorkaStock website is that basically you can create like a little life drawing session for yourself with the little timed, like, you know, 30-second poses, and it'll go through like that automated, like you can kind of build that. I think that kind of thing is incredible. I feel like when it comes to stock photos or photo references, that kind of thing, there's sort of two main goals with using it. Like, one can be really situational. Like, I'm working on this specific piece right now and I need a picture. Like, the character is going to be standing in the foreground, like looking up at a balcony high above them, and they're reaching their arm out like over their head with their fingers like splayed out, like they're trying to grab something in the air, and getting a reference for that pose from that angle, or like a handful of different poses that you can kind of approach it from. Like, here's a person with their hand out, here's a person from this angle, but like the rest of it's different. You kind of collage them together, and that's very like situational. Like, you can kind of use that for this one piece. Like, I need this thing here to be specific. But then there's like also just the whole building a mental library, like expanding your own repertoire of figures and getting faster at coming up with those kind of on the fly, and doing life drawing studies outside of those situational cases, like just being like, I'm just going to draw these poses and just practice, like get that figure drawing. I think that's also really important and helps a lot with kind of like also just coming up with the poses in the first place, like seeing what's possible, what can look kind of interesting. Yeah. So I use photo references myself, both from like online sources. I also will take my own photo references sometimes because occasionally something is just so specific, or like I know that the time it would take for me to search for it, especially things like hand positions, like they've got to be grabbing something really tightly, but one of their fingers is out in a weird way. Like, I'm just going to look at my own hand. And sometimes I'll just be like drawing my left hand with my right hand, like I'm looking like back and forth. Or I'll take a picture of it if I need like a specific pose that isn't one of the angles that I can see easily. So I have like I save some.
Just, so many hand
photos. Oh yeah,
in all of our camera rolls.
Well, hands are notorious. Like, that's one of the things. It's like a meme among artists. Like, hands are hard. Personally, I find feet harder, but like hands, it's nice just to have a visual as you're trying to draw it. Those fingers, they just go everywhere.
I've got a book for that.
Yes.
Well, books definitely also really useful. One of the things that I did also want to mention kind of before we move on is that I've been teaching classes at a local school in not life drawing specifically, but drawing in perspective and also in digital painting. And one of the things that, like, the first thing that I tell students to do when they're beginning an assignment is like find some references, build a mood board to tell me what you want to do before they even get to the point of doing thumbnails, just so that they can decide, like, I want to do like a cool like mountain landscape, or I want to do like an action shot of somebody running on like an exploding freeway or something, like just to distill that intent. And when they get to that stage of like kind of finding the pose images for the character, I often will point them to AdorkaStock specifically, just because it's so useful. And I like the options for searching by camera angle, like the high and low camera angle options, as well as having the filter for floating poses, like the underwater shoots, like those, incredible. Oh, yeah. Nowhere else has those. It's great.
Yeah, the tags on that site are so excellent. Yeah. Just make searching so much easier.
I'm really happy to hear that, because I feel like the Sketch app, I think, is pretty well done, and I made a large investment to try to make that like as good as I could at the start. The actual website gallery, needs a little bit of help. Is my goal this year is to continue to improve that. It's actually kind of funny because people are like, oh, well, can't you just take all the images on the SketchUp and dump them on the site? And that's not really how WordPress works.
Yeah.
So I have to actually go through each image and add it to the site and tag it. And I, you know, the extensive tagging system is part of the reason why this takes forever, but I think it's worth it in the long run, because then it just, I'm trying to recreate what we used to have when we were able to do categories and search.
Yeah. Well, like getting that, like the searchability, like being able to find the right reference is like probably the most important thing, because so many people will just give up. Like they'll do a couple searches, be like, I didn't find it. I got to turn elsewhere, or change the pose or something. So it definitely, like tagging systems and all that, it's a lot of work, but I think it's valuable just to be able to kind of connect with the right thing for what's needed.
Yeah, your effort on that is very appreciated.
100%.
Great. I'll keep it up.
Thank you.
And there's 100% a reason why we're so on team Adorka Stock. Like we've said previously, this has been actually a part of, you know, many artists, mine included, lives for a long time. I mean, I feel like I've been there for at least 15 years using these as something I refer to in my own art. So this is, like Miranda said, invaluable. This access to having resources where it's tagged, we have, you know, the option to do and create our own life drawing experiences and whatnot. Like, this is very much appreciated. And I think it's just integral from that. And continuing on, I'm going to continue or talk about the importance of specifically learning from life. And that comes with something that I'm not seeing a whole lot in the kind of 3D modeling sphere, is the diversity that you can't really get from individuals taking pictures of, you know, life, and how amazing that is that Adorka Stock has access to, well, body diversity, and how important it is to learn from that specifically. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about the importance of anatomy in diversity in stock imagery. And Sarah, I want to open the floor to you for that. You know, what was something that inspired you to kind of go this route to make sure to include different body types and whatnot?
So I would say that it's still probably 80% of the photos, if not more, that I take are still of me. I am my most easily accessible model. But shortly after, I think it was just about during COVID, I saw a huge increase in followers. Everybody was at home. People were picking up new hobbies. They were talking about, how do I get better at drawing? What do I do? So I had a big jump in followers, patrons, you know, everything during COVID. And what I pretty much did was immediately take that money and say, how can I, you know, so before that I had been, my diversity was like a friend I knew. Can you come over? Like I would reach out to my friends and say, would you like to come over to my house and model in your underwear? And I have a lot of, you know, outgoing and adventurous and some esoteric and weird friends. And so to them, this sounds like a good time. And so at the beginning, it was just like, hey, friends, who wants to do this weird thing with me? Because I just wanted to have more people, right? Because you can do stuff with multiple people that you can't alone, or juxtaposing yourself with yourself. So that's how my diversity started, was just begging people I knew. And then once I started making enough money that I felt like I could actually, you know, invest in, it sort of coincided with, this has to be your job, and now it is your job. So I was able to start reaching out to people like the next degree out. So I'd be like, okay, does anyone know a model that would want to do this? It might not be my friend, but like a friend of a friend. So that's how I started kind of networking. But it was still just like people I knew and like people that they knew, you know?
Yeah.
And I've actually, for the most part, kind of kept it like that. When I hired, there's been a couple of models that I've hired that I've found sort of outside of that realm. Well, sometimes people will approach me and say, oh, I'd like to model for you. But being able to pay someone to model significantly increases their desire to participate, I found. Mm-hmm. So that is helped a lot with increasing diversity there. I still have like, a wish list, right? Of like people I want to hire. So obviously like older people. So yes. Middle-aged white lady was a goal of mine. I'm that now. So we're good. I got it. I did it. So, you know, moving forward, it's like, I want very old people, you know, I'd like to hire some very old models. And a lot of what I get from the people that I approach, first of all, I don't know a lot of very old models who are modeling. And if they are, a lot of them look very young. They don't look 60 or 70. They look like a 40-year-old, but they're 70. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like they're modeling because they look so young and fit. And it's the opposite of kind of what I'm going, like, not that they would be bad models and I would still love to have them as a model, but I'm looking for like grannies and chairs, right? Like and you know, I think a lot about Skydancer stock, Marion, who is really has a huge gallery on DeviantArt. He's the guy that you always see. It looks like a wizard. If you look up.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Marion. So he passed a couple of years ago and I think about him a lot because that's, you know, he was that old guy doing modeling, you know, and he was everyone's wizard. That's what he was, you know? And so I'm like, when people tell me, oh, no one wants to see that. No one wants to, you know, and I'm like, gosh, we do though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how I ended up sort of starting to reach out, you know, and here's the thing, I think, with what I'm doing, and people, I know people will say, oh, thank you so much for doing this. I'm so glad you have models of different skin colors and models of different weights and different skills and stuff like that. And I love to be able to do it, but don't I wish that there were more people in those categories who were doing this themselves?
Yeah.
And I wish, you know, because everyone that's ever approached me and been like, I want to do what you do, I'm like, here's everything I know, right? Yeah. Like most of the people that you know, other than me, that are doing pose reference modeling have at some point like been like, hey, Sarah, like how did you start doing this? Or, you know, like, and I've always just been like, here's how to do it. Here's everything I know. Go run. Mm-hmm. And so, and then it's like that, it's the catch 22 of, is there somebody out there? Do we have, you know, some people out there who are doing these, we have Ruby, so fatphotoref.com.
Yes.
So Ruby's doing it, not, you know, not to the level and extent, really, because of, you know, situational stuff, but I'm like, yes, yeah, let's shout about this resource. It's a phenomenal resource. Yeah. So, you know, I want to, if anyone listens to this and they're like, you know what, I am that, I am an underrepresented, you know, size, shape, color in this place, I should do it. You should do it. Mm-hmm. And then tell me you're doing it and I'll yell that you're doing it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, like, you know, it sounds like there is that community aspect that helps boost it, because, you know, one person can't do everything because, you know, there's a lot to cover. I mean, that's just the biggest thing, and especially why diversity is so important, you know, learning as an artist to get away from like a lot of the things that we fall into, you know, just our styles and whatnot, things that we're inspired by, and just why it's so important to have that access to that and whatnot. I'm going to throw this over to Miranda, like, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about anatomy and diversity, and you were saying that, you know, you were later in the game with starting your art and whatnot, and talking about how integral it was that you had access to a Dorca stock, you know, what does having that access to more diversity in these references mean to you in your work?
Well, I am a very basic white person. So, like, I myself in my immediate life, I don't have a lot of diversity because I am white, my husband's white, my kids are white. Like, that's just what we are. So as an artist, especially webcomics and like working on the webcomic now, I'm trying to be more conscious of having diverse characters and having people that look different mm-hmm. than me and what I'm used to. And as like the only way for me to do that is with references, because I can't just imagine up this diverse character. Like I can have a thought in my head, but like I need to see it to actually be able to bring it to life better, and for that I need reference photos. And like I have one of my characters I'm working on, she's a short little witch, and I just have this image of her being very pear-shaped and kind of chubby and just this cute little witch character. And I have this image just stuck in my mind, but it's so hard to find the right reference for it. And I went and I tried to do a 3D model, but you can't replicate the real life look on 3D, especially if you're trying to get bigger. Like it just, it doesn't have like the fat, it doesn't have the fat laying the right way. Like it just doesn't have the life that comes from using a picture of a real person. And it's so like, I think it's just something that like, if we want to see more variety and diversity in art, especially from like white creators, if we want white creators to branch out, they need to be able to have the resource. And like, I'm not trying to put this on resource providers. Like it, even if you're white like me, you should at least try. like, but just in the context of this, having the references available just makes it easier. And then it's just like, why aren't you using these? Like, they're here for you. Use them. Bring that diversity to your creations and to your work, because it's just more meaningful that way, I feel like. Like, I feel like I'm just going to start repeating myself. But yeah, like having the diverse references, like it's one thing to want to do it, but especially if you're a newer artist, you don't always have the tools and ability to just do it like on your own from your brain, whatever. And like, I think people that are really experienced with anatomy and have practiced a lot more than I have can probably take one body type in a pose and translate it into a different body type with the same pose or whatnot. I'm not quite there yet. I try, but it's really hard for me. I more need to see the exact body type in the exact pose is like my ideal situation. Yeah. So yeah, like I love seeing all the variety of reference and body types that are coming up on a Dorkestock, and all the like, I feel like it's starting to kind of spread, but it just like we need more of it.
Thing I keep thinking of when Sarah talked about the knee, and I'm just like, I go back to that because I'm just like, it, you can't really replicate that without seeing a human knee, which I know this sounds weird, but it's just these intricacies that you can't replicate like with you know, certain kind of like assets like 3D or anything like that. And everybody's different, everybody's knee is different too. You're not going to draw the same knee, and I'm so sorry I keep going back to the knee, but the knee, that point, I'm just like, that's exactly it though, is that seeing how a knee works in this, you know, kind of like context with this kind of body type, and then it's going to change.
Like it just changes so much.
I do think it's the need and understanding of more diverse references is spreading, because I will see it, you know, I'll see it in artist spaces. I'll see it in even I would say it's like the community, the pose reference creator community is not that big, right? Like there's not a ton of us and we all sort of know each other. Most of us are friends. And so, you know, when I see somebody, you know, I see somebody doing something and I'm like, yes, that, go in that direction, you know, like when I see it happening and spreading, then, you know, I find great joy in that, because, you know, I know what people are asking me for. And then, you know, if I do it and then other people see me do it and then they say, oh, that went well, I should do that too. That's good. That, like, a lot of times people say like, oh, I don't, you know, not for nothing, but obviously my non, like, you know, non thin young models get more crap, right? Like when I post photos online, you know, the post that I had go the most viral on Facebook, for example, was Lauren Ashley, and she's my biggest model. And so when I do this and I'm posting these references, I'm buffering them from the worst of that, right? If it's them posting it, then they're getting that. So that sounds very like, oh, look at me, the thin young white woman protecting, but it, there is a level of protection that they don't have to look at that crap. Do you know what I'm saying? And so that's the part where I feel like I'm helpful, like that it's helpful. But you know, Lauren exists as a model on the internet. She also will experience that stuff directly. She, you know, the I mean, the amount, we could do a whole episode about body image and having this be your job on the internet, right? That's a whole other episode we can talk about. But you know, it's like, mm-hmm. it takes a certain, what I'm saying is I understand why people who are in these categories are not necessarily putting themselves out there, because I am in a privileged category, and I still, I mean, the amount of crap, you know what I'm saying? And so, I get it.
It's something that I've done life drawing in, like, in person, and for a long time. I mean, I'm still loosely in the group. I just haven't been able to make it to their meetings for a while. But there's this group in my city, which is kind of a loosely organized collection of friends who are artists, and they'll gather once a week and do life drawing, just using each other as models. Like, usually somebody will volunteer to kind of go up in front of the group and do poses, and then they'll reach out to other, like, friends of theirs. And through this group, I've met, like, a lot of folks, like, from a lot of different backgrounds, who are willing to do these modeling sessions and, like, put themselves in front of this bunch of artists who are going to draw them for like 3 hours in exchange, mostly just for like cookies and stuff. But I feel like, so part of me is like, I know that there's like lots of people out there who are interested in this. They, you know, people like to see themselves be drawn, and especially if they're involved in like the arts community already, because a lot of them are in like theater. I don't think that's a coincidence, or they might be involved in burlesque, like with the queer community. But it definitely does change something when the images are being put on the internet. And rather than being an intimate group of friends, it's kind of now open a little bit more to the public. So when you were mentioning that about like people, like, I feel like I might know some folks through that group who potentially would be interested in like getting paid to model. But I could see it going either way, just because I can also understand like hesitation about that side of things. But yeah, I will put some word out there. Mm-hmm. We'll see where it goes. But yeah, also the point about the specificity of design that you guys were talking about, like that thing with like the knee and so on. I feel like it really is that specificity where character designs and where characters truly come to life. Like just those little things, like you've chosen to give them really sharp cheekbones or like an angled jaw, or maybe like they have like maybe they're larger, but they have really, really thin wrists and ankles. Cause you know, sometimes like these quirks of body shape, like things can happen. You might make like decisions like that, but then if it's not your own body type or something that you're super familiar with, when you get to certain angles, it like there's this, especially as a webcomic artist, when you have to like, I need to put this page out for Wednesday, I can't spend this much time on it. Like you might want to rush through things or just invent certain details, like fill them in from your mental library. And depending mm-hmm. on how big that mental library is, it can be more successful or it can be less successful. But like if you have access to a reference that just shows the thing, it can remove a lot of that guesswork and bring back that like specific nature that makes it feel more true to life, and that mm-hmm. that helps things just land a bit more solidly. Because something that, and it's not just with drawings of people that this tends to happen, but the idea of I'm just going to assume that I know what it looks like is something that all artists have to face with everything that you draw. Like if you're, you know, tell a kid to draw a tree and they'll do that, like, you know, the cloud shape and then the stick coming out the bottom of it that just meets the ground. But then if you tell them to look at a tree, now you see all these different branch shapes and like, you know, oh, each leaf is like an individual little plane that comes out of it, and they grow in clusters or they grow in like spread out shapes. And I've also seen people do exercises where they'll be like draw, like even a professional artist who's been doing this for years, you could be like draw a bicycle from memory. And then, you know, you draw the bicycle from memory, and then beside it, you say, now draw a bicycle from a reference, like mm-hmm. look up a picture. And like the first one, the bicycle from memory might look convincingly like a bicycle. But then when you see it placed beside the real thing, you see all these spots where they were kind of assuming and inferring things like, okay, I guess the chain is kind of shaped like that. Like, where does this bar go under the seat? Is it like, is it angled backwards or is it angled upward? Like what happens there? And, you know, you're just making these calls based on like, that's what I think I remember it looks mm-hmm. like. But it is different from being able to see it and Yeah, that's where reference fills the gap.
Yeah, it's I do these little workshops in Screen Tones, and one of the things that I would always say during this is just draw what you see, not what you think you see. And I always see when folks start to do like drawings of anatomy, they start to fix things. Like I'm going back to this, they try to fix the knee, and it's just like, no, the knees do look like that. Like there are different shapes and stuff like that and planes that you're going to have to put into, because they don't all look cookie cutter with that, which is why it's just very important to see references from life.
So that was one thing when I was in life drawing class, when I was in college, the teachers, like very early on in the class, they would like be like, remember, you're drawing what you see and not what you think you see. And my little affant mind is sitting in the corner going, what the hell else would I draw? So like for me, that was always such a weird phrase. I always thought that was so strange, because I'm sitting here in this class and I'm like, I'm drawing what's in front. There's nothing else. and so to now, but I wasn't aware that other people had brain pictures. So to like, it's the same thing when people in books are like, you know, whenever anybody in a book is like visualizing to like do magic, to me, that was always like, I don't know, like because they were magical, or like it was symbolic of the fantasy, which is crazy, because I have friends who are like, you know, hyper fantasia, like they're the opposite end of the spectrum. So they can close their eyes, see a whole picture, and then, you know, make the picture, right? More or less. Like it takes them time and effort to pull it into the physical, right? But they can like go back to a picture and have the same picture and work towards that goal. And I'm just like, man, I need a dragon and a castle, and I need a, you know, and then like, I'm going to look at cloud photo. Like there's just no way, you know, it's so I don't know if you guys know, but I don't illustrate anymore. And it was part of it was burnout, but part of it was that I felt like I had reached like the limitations of my technical ability. So like I was drawing at a level that I liked, was satisfied with, and didn't feel the need to like try to learn the next step.
Yeah.
So part of this might be the ADHD, but like I got to the point where I was like, you know what? I feel like I have achieved as much as I really ever set out to, and I'm going to go make hair bows now. Like, you know, and it's like I joke that my special interests have like a 30-year life cycle. So it just, you know, I drew from as a child until about 30, and then I switched, and we'll see how long bows last. But, you know, to say like, oh, yeah, it's the mind horse. We were just doing this on Blue Sky the other day, and some people can draw a horse, a very believable horse, out of their mind. Beautiful. Well done, you know? But it's still stylized. And if you were to draw from a photo and make a photographic representation of a horse, it's going to be different than, you know. And so when I was in these classes, and that all I could draw was what I could see. And it's, you know, this is a little bit of a boast, but I was very good at life drawing. And I think that's an asset. The fact that I couldn't see anything else except for what, and people would say, how do you do that? And I'm like, I can't explain this to you. But fun fact, my partner is also has aphantasia, and he was the only person in that class I considered a rival. So
see, I have to look into that more, because I don't understand it, because I don't think I see pictures, but I'm like, what does it look like if you do see a picture? So, you know, I'm like on the fence. I'm like, I can't see pictures, but
let's find that chart of the apple that was going around a while ago, because that I actually also have aphantasia, and it was that graphic specifically that made me realize it.
I need to look at it, because I'm just like, I can't see pictures in my head, but
Okay, do you dream? Do you dream in picture? Like,
I do.
Okay. So people who I know who can have, who have had pictures, especially the ones that are on the way other end of the spectrum, their internal visualization is as clear as a dream visualization. Like it is to them, it is as clear as
That's
a dream visualization.
Crazy.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, I'm like, there's no way that this is a small percentage of people, because I know a lot of people who can close their eyes. I could draw you an apple, right? If you hand me a piece of paper, I could draw an apple for you. I conceptually understand what an apple looks like. If you handed me a piece of clay, I could make an apple out of clay. But when I close my eyes, it is black. I am thinking of the idea of an apple, but I cannot see it in my head.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Okay, this is helping.
Is it helping? Or is it sending you down the rabbit hole?
I feel like I can picture things. Like when I'm at that stage of thinking about a concept of an apple, I'm like, oh, it like, okay, I can sort of put together like a visual for myself internally, but it's completely gone if I close my eyes. And like the whole time I'm not actually seeing it. So when people were like, no, like you can actually see it, like as if you're viewing it with your actual eyeballs. I was like, no, that's crazy. You're lying to me.
I'm just like liars, bunch of liars.
Well, this makes me wonder if I also, I can think of what I want, but obviously I don't see a picture. Anyway, so subtitle of this episode is, do you have aphantasia and how do you know? The results will surprise you.
It makes my partner very upset because every time we talk about it, it's like, he's like, wait, no, hold on. Okay, let's take a step back. You know, like, and it's very, it is, if I would agree that this makes absolutely no sense if I didn't have friends who absolutely insist that their internal visualization is as good or better than actually seeing. And on top of that, I have friends who can visualize so well that they can overlay their imaginative images onto their own reality, which in my case, I would think I was losing my goddamn mind. So like, if I could see something, the way that I check if I'm dreaming is to visualize a flower growing out of my pinched fingers. If I could do that while awake, I would have no concept of when I was or was not conscious. So
I would be like, magic is real. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. That's important, though. I feel like, especially when this is why references exist. To help, you know, get away from like the bias that you have with your mind horses and whatnot, and to help, you know, get to those intricacies that make these things like Thane talking about the bicycle together and whatnot. And, you know, it does help with like how we visualize and how we kind of navigate the world. So, you know, I'm going to go to our last question of the episode, which is still a pretty big one. This one's going to be your advice for someone who's not great at drawing anatomy and wants to use something like a Dorcas Socks to get better. So Sarah, what would you tell these folks that are like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I want to improve. Like, where do I start? How do I start? What would be your advice?
So one of the things that I absolutely love, there's a book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain, and I'm not going to remember the author's name, but there's been many editions of it now. It's a book that's been around for a really long time. And when I first read this book, I had some of that same disconnect with some of the exercises, because she talks very similarly about drawing what you see and drawing what's actually there and not what you think you see. But the exercises in that book I find are really pretty. It's a really pretty good place to start. It's a lot of the fundamentals that you would get from like an introductory drawing class. So it's learning how to recognize like hand bias. Hand bias is when you're drawing something and you're sort of slanting it a bit because of the side that you're drawing on. It's really common when you start illustrating, you'll see like little kid art always kind of like seems to sort of shift to one side, and they get better as they start to recognize that. That's why people do mirroring, right? So like if you draw a face, you flip it up. Most people who are listening to this are probably going to be digital artists. So, you know, you flip it, you flip the canvas horizontal, you're looking for your hand bias. That's what you're looking for. So the exercises in this book will kind of walk you through the basics of like how to draw things. And, you know, one of them, for example, is like, if you're working from a reference, you just flip the reference upside down. And that's one way to get your mind to stop seeing, you know, a face, and it just starts seeing the shapes and the spacing and things like that. So there's all kinds of exercises like that. It's a really fun book. I really enjoyed it when I read it. And it's been, like I said, it's been around for a long time, which tells you that it's a useful thing. But yeah, it honestly, you know, it's like that 10,000 hours to learn a skill or whatever, you know. Most of learning how to draw is doing it a lot, but it's not just mindlessly drawing, right? You have to do it with intent. Yes. So people will say, oh, I've been drawing for 5 years and I haven't seen any improvement. And, you know, they're wrong. There probably has been improvement. But if you want to see true growth, you have to be studying. Learn, you know, the way to learn is to actively participate in the thing. I could go swimming every day and not get any better. But if I go swimming with intent and I'm practicing specific skills and I'm, you know, trying to strengthen the amount of time I can hold my breath and things like that. I don't know how to swim. Don't listen to me. but if I'm building muscle for the, you know, goal of learning to swim better, faster, stronger, harder. So that's what I'm saying, is that you have to, you know, every month or week or whatever, pick a thing. I want to get better at gesture, which a lot of people starting out are like, what is gesture? So that's a question you should research.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just if you want to get better at drawing, don't let go of that hunger. Keep trying to learn. And that's what I lost. Do you know what I'm saying? I lost that desire to continue the study of art.
You know, it's a huge... that hunger. Oh my goodness. We have a little community Discord for Screen Tones because we're very resource driven. So we have like a workshop channel where folks can talk about either writing or art. And a lot of people jump into art being like, you know, does this look weird? This is the feedback on this X, Y, Z. And I will see like younger folks being like, I don't want my art to be ugly, but I want to get better. And I'm such a perfectionist with this. And I'm just like, studies are not... I'm sad about this social media brain rot that folks feel like they have to post everything and their entire journey online because they're like, well, I need it to be recognized and anything like that. And I think that that's part of an issue of like people wanting to also improve too. But like there also needs to be, like you were saying, Sarah, like that intent to want to study and to get into the, well, I'm going to say it, the not as fun and rewarding, I guess, parts, like as the instant gratification you'd get from drawing some Blorbo Bleebuses. And, you know, I think it's just important to have that if you want to go from A to Z kind of thing.
You got to be willing to let it get messy.
Yes. Make mistakes. All right, Miranda, you tell us your advice. What's some advice that you'd like to give to folks?
I get what Sarah has said about like just not wanting to, like reaching a point and being like, yeah, I think I'm good here, and then moving on. I know for me, like I don't aspire to be able to draw photorealistic artwork. I admire it and I love it, but I just know I don't have it in me to, like, at least at this point. Maybe I'll like, maybe it'll change, but like I don't have it in me to get to that level and work to that. Like I want to draw webcomics and my webcomics are not going to look like photographs, and that's okay because it's not supposed to, and I'm happy with that. But I do like to have my characters look like they are moving the right way, and to do that I have to have anatomy in it. So just finding poses, and I get stuck on a lot on like, okay, I need this pose for my comic. My character is doing this. I need a specific pose. Finding examples of that pose and seeing how the muscles are moving, what is overlapping, because foreshortening is ridiculously hard and I hate it, but I have to do it. And so just seeing like I'm drawing my character picking a lock, and just like you're facing the back. And so I'm drawing her and I'm like, I don't think you would see the hands because she's right in front of it. But it looks weird because she doesn't have, like, you don't see her arms at all. And so I had to like go take a picture of myself in the pose I'm doing to prove to myself that, yes, you don't see the hands. This is okay. So just seeing the pose and getting that, like, even if it's just, I don't know, verification of like, okay, what I'm thinking and what I'm drawing is in fact correct, even if it looks weird. Like sometimes it just looks off until you see it in a physical person or in a picture. And that's what that's another good way to use references. So that's one way I use them.
I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't drop in here and mention that if you're my patron, you get anytime requests.
Oh, heck yes.
So it's perfect for the, can you just take a picture of yourself from the back, but you've got your hands on a doorknob? I can do that. Right. You know, I'll be right back. Let me just.
The dream.
You know, yeah. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Noted. Noted. Okay. Well,
going to put Sarah on call.
Yeah. But the other thing that I recognize helps me so much, but I am bad at doing it and like doing it a lot. And I love the Screen Tones workshops because they kind of force, like they reminded me like, oh, I should work on this, is just doing like through a Dorcas sketch or whatever, like an actual live drawing class, if you can get to that, and just drawing something that you're not trying to get a specific, like not for a specific purpose, drawing just for the sake of practicing and doing the contours and gestures and like focusing on different aspects of the pose, whether it's like you're just drawing the outline or you're focusing on where the blank space is between the arms and the legs, or just getting the overall gesture. Like, even if I'm looking at a pose and trying to replicate it, sometimes it just doesn't look right until I'm like, okay, step back. What is like the overall movement of this pose? And getting that, and I feel like you can stylize and emphasize it more in, when you're drawing, in my case, webcomics, because it doesn't have to look realistic. So you can, if you know the gesture, you can emphasize it more and then still have a realistic enough looking thing, but it looks stylized or looks just bigger, that's the word, like on the picture, and just more cartoony, like because you understand like the overall flow of the pose. And that's something that I think you have to practice to be able to do more effectively. And just doing it over and over and like starting small and just working your way up and doing the different time frames, like the 15 seconds is not enough time.
It's good though.
But also, if you do 15 seconds and then you get to the minute and you're like, I have forever.
Yep.
It's wild. And it's just so cool to see. And I did some 15, like I did one of the sessions a while, like fairly recently, and they looked so much better than like month from last year. And I was like, oh, I've actually improved at getting these faster. Like, so, but again, like you have to actually practice. It's not like if you're sitting down to draw a webcomic, you're not sitting down to practice that. And the practice is what helps you kind of retain that too.
That actually was what I was gonna what I was gonna mention for my own thing. Just that, like, practice. The building that mental library is only going to happen with repetition. And so doing life drawings, whether it's in person, whether it's using something like that, like the life drawing session builder on the Adorkastock site, a lot of them will do a flow which starts with really short poses, like 15 or 30 seconds, and then we'll do like, you know, 5 or 10 of those, and then move on to like 1 minute, and then move on to 2 minute, and then move on to 5 minute. And doing the really, really short ones, like you're not going to be making like high art out of these. But that's not the point. Like the point isn't to make like a beautiful picture. It's just like, how quickly can you capture like the essence of this pose, this little, you know, somebody running or somebody lifting something or kneeling on the floor? Like how few lines can you use to capture that and still retain that, like, oh, I can tell what they're doing. How are they moving? Where's their weight being held? Is there momentum? Like little things about the pose and getting practice at seeing those. And the more you do it, the quicker it'll be the next time. And as you're starting out a picture, like you'll be like, oh, I've drawn like, you know, 50 tiny little drawings of people running. And now I'm significantly faster at drawing somebody, you know, running, because I kind of understand like, okay, here's where the arms and legs go and like what's going on with their center of gravity. And honestly, I would recommend, like, even aside from that, like not even necessarily just pictures of people, but just draw like studies of things like around you. Just set aside like a little, like, you know, maybe 5 minutes or less, like a day. It doesn't have to be intense, but like, you know, if there's like a funny lamp across the room from you, or like maybe there's an interesting candlestick or like a tree, just the view outside your own window, like just do little studies. They don't have to be anything much, but it's like, because a comic is not just people. You also have like things in the setting, and just every time you draw something from observation, you're getting more practice at having your hand be connected to what your eyes are seeing, like, and getting used to that sort of, okay, so that's how this angle, how this plane is angled or whatever. I'm going to draw that. And like, here's how that curve goes. Just practice.
If I was going to start drawing again, that's where I would start. I would just start drawing things in the house, things in the yard. You know, trees are great because trees have gesture. And the not everybody, I guess not everybody has trees. There's my, but you know, that's a, you can sit at the bus stop and sketch, you know, people on the street and, you know, there's just, it's really just, yeah. Like you said, getting that brain eye hand connection flowing and mm-hmm. it really having someone and having a community of people to kind of give you feedback on that journey is good. But criticism at that point is, I don't think as valuable as just continuing to mm-hmm. sort of look at it yourself. You know what a lamp looks like. So if you draw a lamp and you say, well, that's 50% of the way there, you know, you kind of know what you're going towards. So
yeah. And it's funny because that thing about like critique, like the goal of it isn't really to make something to show off. Like it's much more kind of internal. And I guess maybe that's why so many people overlook this as a practice, because it doesn't really result in something that's going to go viral on social media unless you combine it with something really funny, like the Mind Horse or something like that. But mm-hmm. that's not the goal. Like that's not really the point.
Yeah. And I do see a lot of folks struggle with that because they're like, well, it's boring. And I'm like, mm-hmm. well, spoiler alert. The journey isn't exactly entertainment all the way. And there are going to be weird things that you're going to have to look up. Another thing, you know, a nice little companion to the Mind Horse is the cars. When I could tell people don't look up cars and they're like, well, it's a box with like four wheels, you know, it's just. Looking up those references will make you appreciate a lot of the shapes that go into the things that you see every day that you think you know, kind of thing. And it's just why they're so integral, because like everybody was saying, that you're going to build that mental library and it's going to help you with drawing, you know, web comics, as far as like, you know, you're gonna be drawing this character like 50,000 times. So when you have that mental library of knowing how, you know, someone is posed in this position, or drawn a lot of people running, like Thane was saying, or swimming, you know, it cascades that skill set cascades to the way that you're kind of going to be tackling these gestures, these shapes, and it helps improve in these interesting ways.
If you drape a different types of fabric over objects and you shine a light on them, what you'll learn from that study can inform so much more later, right? So like if mm-hmm. you take silk and drape it over a pile of objects and draw that, and then you take a linen and you drape it over, and then you take tin foil and you crunch it over the objects, what you'll get out of that is, you know, like a visual library is what people call it. For me, it's more like vibes. But like you'll get information that will inform the next time mm-hmm. you draw a t-shirt, or the next time you draw a dress crumpled up on the floor, or the next time you draw, you know, any of those. The visual material understanding of how things react in physical space. That's the kind of stuff that you will only learn with intentional study. You have to observe. I say you will only, but I mean, we've got artists out here like, you know, the late Kim Jong-ji, who could just have a mural in his head that he then just drew, you know, directly from the pen onto the wall, right? So there's a spectrum here. But I feel like for the most part, people, you're only going to be able to create what you have seen. So the intentionality is really important.
Yeah. And it definitely feeds. Everything feeds back into like your nice little system, your brain, your mental library is just slowly getting fed how things interact as far as anatomy, as far as objects, as far as texture and whatnot. This stuff is important because it feeds into how you tackle different aspects. And I can tell when people have done studies of like character drawing a suit with the way that they draw the folds. I'm just like, okay, I know that this person has looked up references because that's how it should be folded, as opposed to like, you know, I think it was a typical thing learning in school and everything, like when they were showing like when people would draw jeans and stuff like that, and being like, well, denim is very thick, people draw it like leggings, and it's just interesting, like this stuff feeds itself. So references like a Dorkasog, like, you know, Ruby's Fat Photo Ref, there's a lot in there. I know the community is small, but there is a lot of stuff. And we're going to be dropping a nice little resource in the links in the description in this video. We've compiled an entire list of different places to learn anatomy from, and folks can check that out. It just There's a huge list. It'll take me a little while to just name it all, but definitely check that out if you're someone that's just, you know, ready to learn. It was
life-changing episode today.
It absolutely was. I'm going to be thinking about aphantasia a lot moving forward. But with that, that has been a Chicken Caesar salad wrap. I want to thank Sarah so much for coming onto this episode, talking about references with us on Screen Tones. I've been your host, Crispy. You can find my work at ghostjunksickness.com and lunarblight.com.
I am Sarah Ford, aka Adorkastock. You can find all of my links on adorkastock.com/hub. That will give you basically everything. And I will just also mention that I am an artist and I make very fancy hair bows, which you can see on adorkbows.com.
I am very curious, so I will be looking that up too. I'm Miranda, and you can find my work at mirandacakes.art.
And I'm Verithane, and you can find my work at chiralt.sevensmith.net and at witchwoodcomic.com.
All right, everybody. Time to draw a mind horse. Let's go!
I'm going to draw a mind car.
Yeah, I feel like I need to do a car or a bicycle, because I feel like I would fail at that miserably.
The bicycle's too hard for me. I can't. Yeah. I'm not going to do that.
There's way too many poles on that.
Thank you for listening to Screen Tones, a webcomic podcast. You can find all our episodes at screentonescast.com. We've got a couple links over there to our Ko-fi and merch shop, where your support will help us create more episodes and keep us talking about anything and everything webcomics. You can also find us on YouTube, Blue Sky, Tumblr, and our Discord server. Thank you so much for listening, sharing, rating, and supporting, and we'll see you next time.